We gather this morning with friends old and new to set our minds and hearts on the task of living as our best selves, the open, loving, compassionate selves that we long to be. Today, to that end, we focus on the spiritual practice of honesty. And as a tip of the hat to Mother's Day, we look at honesty within the family context. May the flame of our faith shine its light on our endeavor this day and every day. If there are any children out there who would like to come up here so you can see better, please do so now. And Bill, if you wouldn't mind bringing me the handheld mic, that'd be great. Oh, or Judy, thank you. Thank you. Okay, ready? I'm going to tell you a story, and then partway through the story, I'm going to ask you what you think the girl in the story should do. Listen carefully. Georgia had a secret. It wasn't the good kind of secret that makes you feel happy inside, like when you're planning a surprise for your mom's birthday. It was a secret that made her feel yucky inside. She and her best friend Sophie had done something bad at school. They had sneaked a permanent marker into the girls' bathroom and drew on one of the walls in the stalls. Sophie made Georgia promise not to tell anyone. Georgia had agreed because she didn't want to get in trouble, and she didn't want her friend to get in trouble either. But the longer Georgia kept the secret, the worse she felt. It was as if the secret was twisting around in her stomach. The longer she kept the secret, the more tightly it twisted. Late one night, when the secret was making her so uncomfortable that she could not sleep, Georgia whispered the secret to her stuffed snake. She had had this soft purple snake since she was a baby, and she loved it very much. As Georgia whispered about Sophie and the pen and drawing on the wall and the promise not to tell, Georgia felt like her snake was listening with love and understanding. Georgia felt a little better and drifted off to sleep. The next day, Georgia's grandpa picked her up from school and took her out for ice cream. Georgia's grandpa was the most loving person Georgia knew. He always listened to her and encouraged her in everything she did. He told her nearly every week, "I love you, Georgia Peach, every day, all the time, no matter what." When Georgia didn't eat much of the ice cream that she usually gobbled up, her grandpa asked her, "Is there something wrong, little Peach?" Georgia really wanted to tell her grandpa about the secret, but she was afraid of getting in trouble and afraid that Sophie would be mad at her for telling the secret. After all, Georgia had promised not to tell. I'm going to pause the story here to ask you a question. If you were Georgia, what would you do? Amelia has an answer.
I would tell my grandpa.
You would tell your grandpa. What would you do, Jenny?
Okay, two things. First of all, girls do that at my school all the time.
Uh-huh.
So, and second of all, I would tell my grandpa if he's such a loving person. So.
All right. Athena, do you have a different answer or same answer? Different answer?
Yeah, I would tell too. But, and then if Sophie got mad at me, I would say, "Well, it wasn't the right thing to draw on the wall, so I had to tell." And, you know, if
awesome.
You're not telling, then that's fine. Then I'm sort of annoyed with you.
All right. All right. Audrey.
I would try to erase it.
Aha. It was a permanent marker, so erasing it might be difficult. All very good ideas there. So let's find out what Georgia did. What did Georgia do? So Georgia's grandpa asked her, "Is something wrong?" And Georgia replied, "My friend and I did something we weren't supposed to do. I feel bad about it, but I promised my friend I wouldn't tell." "Ah, sweetheart," said Grandpa, "that's a tough one. Would it help if I said that I would be your safe listener?" What's a safe listener? George asked. Grandpa explained, "You can tell me everything, and I won't get you or your friend in trouble. And I can help you work out a plan." Georgia told him everything. It had felt good to tell her stuffed snake the truth, but it felt even better to tell a real person. She could feel the secret loosen its hold on her stomach. With her grandpa's help, Georgia decided to write a letter to her teacher. In the letter, Georgia confessed that she had drawn on the wall in the bathroom with permanent marker. Georgia didn't mention what Sophie did. She just confessed her own part. Georgia wrote that she was sorry and that she was willing to do whatever her teacher suggested to make up for it. Before Georgia gave the letter to the teacher, Georgia showed the letter to Sophie, explaining how bad Georgia had been feeling and how the only way to get rid of that yucky feeling in her stomach was to tell the truth. Sophie was mad at first, but she appreciated that at least Georgia wasn't getting Sophie in trouble. Georgia was surprised at how nice the teacher was after reading the letter. The teacher thanked Georgia for being honest. She said everyone makes mistakes sometimes and that Georgia was brave for admitting hers. They talked about making a plan for Georgia to stay after school and help the custodian paint over the drawing. When Sophie heard how kind the teacher had been about the whole thing, Sophie decided to confess her part as well. By the end of the day, Georgia felt 100% better. The secret was gone, it had let go completely, and her stomach and her whole self was back to normal. Now that's the end of the story, but I have one more question for you. Remember how the grandfather was a safe listener for Georgia? A safe listener is someone you can always be honest with, someone to whom you can tell everything, the entire truth, even secrets that make you feel yucky inside. A safe listener is someone who will listen with love and help you work out whatever you need to work out. So my question for you is, can any of you think of someone who acts as a safe listener in your life? Amelia immediately has an answer. Oops, sorry.
The school counselor at our school named Miss Kelly.
Awesome. That's a great example of a safe listener.
I have a counselor named Jacqueline, and he's...
Jacqueline, awesome. School counselors. Didn't even think of that.
Anybody but my brother.
Anybody but your brother. Fair enough. Jenny?
My mom, because she's a psychologist.
Your mom, because she's a psychologist. Rock on.
You.
Oh, you. That's... Well, and that was actually one of my points. You don't have to be my daughter to have me or Reverend Shauna as your safe listener, because ministers are always there as safe listeners for you also. So thank you for listening. You can go to your classes as the grown-ups stand for the arches and sing you on your way. I invite you to breathe in and breathe out. If you feel comfortable doing so, close your eyes. Spirit of life and love, as we center ourselves here and now, help us to feel your power and strength within us, between us, and all around us. Held in this sacred space with compassion for ourselves and one another, let us speak some truths about Mother's Day. This day touches each person in this room differently. Some of us are thinking of beloved mothers, grandmothers, and mother figures, living still or with us in spirit only. We cherish these women in our hearts, with appreciation, with longing, with love. Some are thinking of more complicated mother relationships. There may be love there. There may also be tension, anger, disappointment, sorrow, sometimes even abuse. Some among us are experiencing Mother's Day from the perspective of being a mother. For some mothers, this day stirs up feelings of love and tenderness toward children and grandchildren, feelings of gratitude for the chance to be a parent. But here, too, are difficult feelings as well. Being a mother can be hard. There's the pressure of not living up to the elusive ideal of the perfect mother. The pain a mother feels when one's child is hurting or struggling. The pain a mother feels when her relationship with her child is not as close or tension-free as she would like it to be. Spirit of life and love, we hold in our compassion as well those who struggle with Mother's Day for other reasons. Women who are content with their decision to not have children and are tired of people who view their lack of children as a loss or something to be pitied. All mothers who have ever felt left out of Hallmark's image of motherhood. Other mothers, stepmothers, single mothers, non-birth mothers, birth mothers who make adoption plans, adoptive mothers, foster parents, grandparents raising children, trans mamas. Motherhood takes many forms. We honor them all. We hold in our hearts this day women and men who want to have or raise children, but are not able to do either. We hold in our hearts this day women and men who have lost children, babies who died in the womb, children who were born and grew but died too soon. Gently, tenderly, we wrap that grief in love. What a mix of emotions move in our hearts this Mother's Day. Spirit of life, as we sit here in quiet together, letting our feelings be whatever they are, may we find in the mix those seeds of strength and love and compassion that can sustain us through life's ups and downs. Whatever our own experience of mothers or mothering, may each of us find what we need to nurture those seeds into full bloom, a bouquet of strength, love, and compassion for everyone. So may it be.
When I married many years ago, I was very young, immature, and naive. As it turned out, I married a total stranger who I thought I knew and loved. He had joined the RCMP a few years earlier, and from that moment until we married, we only saw each other a few times a year. I was raised in a home with honest values and morals. I definitely knew what honesty meant. Although unintentional, I began a journey in that marriage that led down a path towards years of dishonesty with my husband, my family, and myself. Our marriage was a struggle right from the start. We were opposites. He saw things quite differently, and our opinions on various issues were sometimes miles apart. We had definitely grown apart since our engagement, with me living in one province and he living in another. As a new bride, this was my first time away from home. Running my own household was daunting. Trying to learn and practice basic cooking and cleaning skills under the hypercritical and often mean-spirited scrutiny of my new husband was terrifying. With a supportive partner, I probably could have faced these challenges despite my insecurity and inexperience. I didn't know many people in our new town, and I was lonely and desperately unhappy. My mother, whom I loved dearly and was my confidant, carried the burden of my honesty. I wrote copious amounts of letters to her, sometimes two or three in a week. I poured out my heart and my anguish to her. Now, as a mother myself, I understand how heartbroken she must have been for me, living so far apart and feeling so thwarted by my disconsolate phone calls and letters. I was brutally honest with her in terms of what was going on in my marriage, while I was very deceptive with my own husband. He was not a patient man and had a temper I wanted to avoid at all costs. I want to be clear, he did not physically abuse me, but used verbal abuse, which over the years left me with little self-esteem. Knowing what the outcome would be to certain questions or issues, I chose to be misleading, more like sins of omission. Perhaps you've been all in a situation like that. In such a precarious position, I felt the only way to avoid pain and conflict was to protect myself by being less than totally honest. I didn't like that feeling of being so deceitful, but I felt I had no other choice. Our marriage hobbled along with highs and lows. We had separations, every time trying to salvage what we thought was worth saving, reconnecting, with each of us promising to do better. We had three beautiful children, a lovely home, good jobs, the whole package. But in the deepest part of our beings, we both knew we were not being honest with our families, our children, and ultimately ourselves. After 22 years of living a lie and pretending everything was fine or would get better, we were finally able to be straightforward with one another. No easy task. My sorrow and regret is the damage I left in my wake. Separations and divorce are hard on everyone involved. Would I have done anything differently? Yes. I should have left the marriage years before. I should have paid attention much earlier that I couldn't continue to live in a marriage where I didn't feel emotionally safe and secure for myself and my children. The good news is that life has a way of offering unexpected blessings if we are open to these experiences. For the last 23 years, I have been living in a loving and supportive relationship, one based on understanding, encouragement, friendship, and laughter. Within this safe and happy relationship, I am now able to live with integrity and honesty.
In our Soul Matters theme study groups, the spiritual exercise set before us in this month of honesty is this. Catch yourself in a lie and listen to what that lie is trying to tell you. The idea is to track our own fibs, lies, and dishonesties and figure out why we're doing it. When I first read the exercise, I thought, but I don't lie. And I don't do the big lies. I don't cheat on my taxes or tell my wife I'm in a meeting when I was actually at the racetrack. But when I considered the issue on a subtler level, I realized that many of us who are basically good, honest people often find ourselves stretching or omitting the truth on a smaller scale. When you open to the range of these subtler dishonesties, the question becomes fascinating. What motivates your particular deceptions? Do you lie to protect your image, covering up small faults and inadequacies? Do you fib to protect other people's feelings or avoid conflict? Do you fudge the truth to protect something you don't want to lose? As is stated by the author of this exercise, our lies don't just tell us what we're trying to get away with. They also tell us what we are wrestling with. So how do your lies speak to what you are wrestling with? Here are the instructions. 1, spend a few days, maybe even a week, paying extra attention to when, how, and how often you lie. 2, identify a pattern. 3, figure out what that says about you and what you're wrestling with. 4, try to boil that down to into one word or sentence. For example, I figured out that I'm scared to trust people with my truth. Or, I realized that I'm more conflict avoidant than I thought. Or, I thought this was about me being compassionate, but now I'm not so sure. 5, come to your Soul Matters group ready to talk about this sentence and the insights connected to it. Even if you are not in a Soul Matters group, I invite you to consider trying the exercise this month. What do you think your sentence will be? What motivates your slips into dishonesty? As I mentioned earlier, today we're going to consider the question in the context of families. What do the lies we tell in our families tell us about ourselves and the family systems in which we move? One major motivation for lying in families and elsewhere is self-protection. Sometimes people lie to protect themselves from an actual threat, like physical or emotional abuse. As Susan's story suggested, the lying in those cases is not so much a problem in and of itself as it is an indication of a much bigger problem. It's a red flag that says, hey, one shouldn't have to lie to feel safe in a relationship. Something is very wrong here. GLBT people who grew up in homophobic families may be familiar with this experience. There are other forms of lying as self-protection. As is noted in the theme article in our May newsletter, Pamela Meyer, author of Lie Spotting, suggests that deception and lying are attempts to bridge the gap between who we are and who we wish we were. This is lying to protect our self-image. For example, we want to see ourselves and want others to see us as punctual and considerate of other people's time. So when we are late to the family gathering, we blame it on the traffic. We didn't make up the traffic. It was real. It was there. But it is also true that if we had planned ahead better, we would have been there on time despite any traffic. Or maybe you like to think of yourself as intelligent and well-informed. So when your scholarly brother-in-law goes into a detailed discussion of the latest award-winning tome of political analysis, you pretend that you understand more than you actually do. Maybe at a family gathering, you fib to cover up your own forgetfulness or minimize the extent of your health issues. Maybe you tell yourself that you don't want people pitying you or thinking you're less capable than you actually are. Maybe you wonder if you're also cutting yourself off from your loved ones more than is necessary. 2 more examples of lying to protect our self-image. I have a friend, we'll call him Mark, who is a dutiful spouse who prides himself on selflessly taking care of his family. He has a habit of justifying his actions by listing all the advantages they will have for other people. "Since you've been working so hard," he'll say to his wife, "I went to the bakery to get you a treat, your favorite raspberry scone. I also picked up some bread for the kids' lunches and cinnamon rolls for all of us." In fact, his primary motivation was to get a cinnamon roll for himself. He and I discussed why he feels he can't just say that. He said he's always had a hard time standing up for his own needs, in part because he doesn't want to seem selfish, in part because the prospect of stating his needs and possibly having them denied is more painful than the certainty of not getting them met because he never asked. We can dig up some deep stuff when we consider the roots of our deceptions. Another friend, we'll call her Lori, tells about a funny pattern into which she and her partner have fallen. They both live extremely busy lives. Free time is at a premium. Whenever one of them finds a bit of free time and begins to use that time for relaxing, reading a book or watching TV or playing Candy Crush on the iPad, and the other one walks in from a meeting or the grocery store or picking up the kids, the one who was relaxing covertly ceases the leisure activity and immediately switches the screen to work email or hops up to do the dishes. Lori wonders what it says about herself, her marriage, their lives, that they feel they have to sneak leisure time. There's protecting our own image, how others see us, how we see ourselves. There's also protecting ourselves from getting in trouble. To lift up how natural this impulse is, the aforementioned Pamela Meyer tells us about Coco the gorilla and her pet kitten. Maybe you remember hearing about this gorilla who developed a loving bond with a kitten. When Coco's trainers discovered that Coco had pulled a sink out of the wall, Coco used her sign language to say, "Cat did it." Perhaps you recall lies you told as a child to your parents to avoid getting in trouble. I wonder what deceptions we now practice in our families to avoid the adult equivalent of getting into trouble. Certainly, fibbing to avoid sparking someone's anger is not uncommon. What do those lies tell us about ourselves and our relationships? Some of the lies we tell in the family context are aimed at protecting others. Anyone who deals with children in their family or extended family is likely to have wrestled with the question of how honest to be with children, especially with tricky topics like sex or death or the scary, awful things that sometimes happen in our world. There are guidelines we try to follow. Answer their questions truthfully in a straightforward and concise way. Follow their lead. Don't tell them more than they are ready to hear. It can be tricky, though. I know a mom in the States who found herself in a conversation with her 6-year-old daughter that went something like this. "So, Mommy, in movie ratings, there's G for little kids and PG for older kids. What else is there?" "Well," said the mother, "there's PG-13 for kids 13 and older, and there's R for grown-ups." Apparently, the mom was not versed in the newer NC-17 rating, no children under 17. She was old school, so R was what she knew about. The child asks, "What do R movies have in them? Bad words?" "Yeah, bad words, and sometimes scary things, and sometimes violence." "Okay, so G, PG, PG-13, and R. Is there anything higher than R?" "Well," you can just feel her brain racing. Does she lie? Does she tell the truth? She tried to avoid the question, changed the topic, but the daughter was persistent. "Is there anything higher than R?" "Well, yes, there's something called X." "What do X-rated movies have in them?" Clearly, neither the mom or her daughter had taken our Unitarian sexual education program. The mom was completely unprepared. She says she backpedaled furiously and inelegantly, essentially telling her daughter that she could not explain it in a way that her daughter would understand until her daughter was older, an unsatisfying non-answer that left her daughter frustrated and confused. The mom later wondered what her struggle said about her own discomforts and fears, and how those discomforts affected her difficulty in finding an age-appropriate, truthful answer for her daughter. Whether it's about sex or mythic characters or death or the scary, awful things that happen to people in our world, how do you decide how much truth to tell the children in your lives? How do you walk the line between honesty and protection? Sometimes we lie to protect the adults in our family as well. Perhaps you compliment someone's cooking or exaggerate how pleased you are with a particular gift. Maybe a relative invites you to visit, and rather than tell the truth that you don't enjoy visiting with that particular relative, you make excuses about your busy schedule. What fibs have you been tempted to use to protect the feelings of your relatives? Sometimes we lie to protect the family system. Think of the dishonesties that people perpetuate in your family to protect everyone from unprotective or unnecessary upset. The Soul Matters materials give the real example of a person who tells her mom with Alzheimer's that the pills her mom has to take are vitamins. People who care for family members with dementia are often in that kind of position. If grandma thinks you are her dead husband and is delighted to see you, why spoil her joy with the truth? And here we come to the crux of it. Once we figure out why we are drawn to particular patterns of dishonesties, then we can consider whether we wish to continue. We can consider, for example, when is it more important to be honest than to protect something or someone in the family system. Maybe some of you have felt moved to speak your truth in your family, even though you knew it would cause some unrest in the family system. When I was 18 or so, at the urging of some mentors, I wrote a 16-page handwritten letter to my father, sharing with him what it had been like for me as a child and a teen to receive the demeaning critiques of his wife, my stepmother. She was the mother figure I could never please, and I worried that her low opinion of me would influence my father's feelings toward me. Previous to the letter, my father and I had avoided the topic. He knew there were tensions between his wife and myself, but we didn't talk about it. I took the risk of stirring things up by writing the letter because, one, my stomach was always in knots around them anyway. It didn't therefore seem to matter much whether the tension was on the surface or below the surface. And two, I hoped that in expressing my truth, my dad and I could find a way toward healing. I imagine many people have made that decision in family relationships, the decision to honestly express dissatisfactions within a given relationship, figuring that the risk of stirring up conflict is worth the possibility of working toward healing. As Reverend Shauna noted last week, sometimes you don't get the response you desire. Sometimes you speak your truth and it seems like nothing changes. But usually, even when the other person doesn't change, the fact that you spoke your truth, the truth you needed to speak, can change things inside of you. You may be left with the tension of things not being okay, but at least you no longer hold the tension of pretending that everything is okay. Speaking your truth even when nothing changes can also help you walk away from or let go of an unhealthy relationship. When else might you decide that stirring up conflict is a reasonable price to pay for speaking a truth? Sometimes dysfunctions are so harmful that they need to be named. Think of interventions for alcoholics, addicts, or untreated mental illness. Consider abuse, incest, molestation. These things thrive on secrecy. Honesty is a powerful tool for liberation. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that not all secrets are ours to tell. We all know not to out people who have not outed themselves. We know to let people speak their own truth on their own timetable. So when might it not be worth it to tell the truth? When might it be better to go along with silence or deceptions that effectively keep the peace in a family situation? I remember when I was a psychology major in university, and I was so committed to total honesty and emotional openness that I would want to talk with whomever I was dating about every little smidgen of tension either of us felt in a relationship. My mother gently suggested, "Melora, you don't have to talk about every little bump in the road. You can just let some things go." I'm still more interested in talking things through than she is, but over the years, I've come to see the wisdom of letting some things go. I've noticed that some older people are especially skilled at discerning when and what to let go. I know people who are, for example, able to sit with their cousin at Thanksgiving, artfully avoiding the topic of pipelines. The cousins know they disagree, and neither will convince the other. There's no point in speaking their truths out loud. I know people who wish they were closer to their siblings, but feel that voicing that desire would do absolutely no good. Instead, they try to appreciate the relationship for what it is, superficial perhaps, but friendly and not unenjoyable. I know people who have done something similar with their parents. The story is usually something like this. A person, we'll call him Jason, went through phases in his younger years of being furious at his parents, for very good reasons. He bravely spoke his truth, but ended up disappointed at his parents' lack of understanding and responsiveness. Still, over the years, even with all the mistakes and imperfections and disappointments, Jason came to see that there was something in his relationship with his parents worth honoring. As an older man, he decided that his parents did the best they could with the resources they had. He finds he no longer needs their approval or understanding the way he used to. He accepts their love in the form they are able to give it. No longer needing anything from them, he finds it is easier to just let them be who they are. He visits, calls, and cares for them as best he can. Lying to protect ourselves, lying to protect others, lying to protect the family system. Discerning when the lying does more harm than good, and when it does more good than harm. This is all just the tip of the iceberg. I invite you to use this month to consider your own patterns. Under what circumstances are you tempted to be less than honest? Why? What does your pattern tell you about yourself, your family, the things with which you are struggling in your life? How might you wish to address those issues? Will your plan involve striving to be more honest or something else? Lastly, how might we use this discernment about honesty to better live our mission? To transform ourselves and our world through compassionate action. Spirit of life, web of life, leave us into this tender day. Source of compassion, speak through us in all we do and say, as we do our best to discern when and how to practice honesty within our families, within our communities, within ourselves. Blessed be.